Oregon's child incarceration rate is one of the worst in the country. A new investigative report by Disability Rights Oregon found that kids in custody at NorCor, a jail in the Dalles, receive harsh discipline, including solitary confinement, for infractions such as asking what time it is or for just looking around. These kids are as young as 12 years old. Other states are reducing child incarceration. Why not Oregon? Join us on Prison Pipeline, February 5th at 6:30 p.m.
Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor U.S.-Saudi Coalition, Bring Peace or War, on Saturday, February 3rd, from 2 to 5 p.m. at the Lincoln Performance Hall in Portland. This event will focus on Saudi wars, aggressions, and its relations with the West. Speakers include Aisha Juman, Mohammed Al-Namir, Catherine Shakhtam, and more. Again, that's U.S.-Saudi Coalition, Bringing Peace or War, on Saturday, February 3rd, from 2 to 5 p.m. at the Lincoln Performance Hall, 1620 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. Is proud to co-sponsor U.S.-Saudi Coalition, Bring Peace or War, on Saturday, February 3rd, from 2 to 5 p.m. at the Lincoln Performance Hall in Portland. This event will focus on Saudi wars, aggressions, and its relations with the West. Speakers include Aisha Juman, Mohammed Al-Namir, Catherine Shakhtam, and more. Again, that's U.S.-Saudi Coalition, Bringing Peace or War, on Saturday, February 3rd, from 2 to 5 p.m. at the Lincoln Performance Hall, 1620 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, you're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9:02 and time for Sojourner Truth Radio.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Today, we pay tribute to the late, great investigative journalist, Robert Parry, better known as Bob Parry, who passed away this weekend. He was a regular guest here on Sojourner Truth. And to discuss his memory and legacy of strong, independent investigative journalism, we will speak with Dr. Gerald Horn, with Gareth Porter, who himself is an investigative historian and journalist on U.S. national security policy, and Norman Solomon, journalist, media critic, author, and founder of the Institute for Public Accuracy. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Eileen Alfandary. Donald Trump delivers his first State of the Union address this evening. He will appear before lawmakers with approval ratings hovering in the mid to high 30 percentage points. A recent survey showed 67% said the country was more divided because of Trump. Trump said he would address the issue of how to extend protections for the young undocumented immigrants brought to this country as children.
It's a big speech, an important speech. We cover immigration, and for many years, they've been talking immigration. They never got anything done. We're going to get something done, we hope. It's got to be bipartisan, because the Republicans really don't have the votes to get it done in any other way. So it has to be bipartisan, but hopefully the Democrats will join us, or enough of them will join us, so we can really do something great.
It's not clear whether Trump will discuss the threat to his presidency posed by Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation. Massachusetts Democrat Joe Kennedy, the grandson of former Attorney General and Senator Robert F. Kennedy, will deliver the official Democratic response. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders will have a live stream of his remarks. Virginia Delegate Elizabeth Guzman will have a Spanish language response. Brushing aside opposition from the Justice Department, Republicans on the House Intelligence Committee voted to release a classified memo that purports to show improper use of surveillance by the FBI and the Justice Department in the Russia investigation. The four-page memo has become a political flashpoint, with Donald Trump and many Republicans pushing for its release and suggesting that some in the Justice Department and FBI conspired against the president. The memo was written by Republicans on the committee led by Chairman David Nunes of California. He's a close Trump ally and has become a fierce critic of the FBI and Justice Department. The memo was delivered to the White House last evening. Trump now has 5 days to object to its release by the committee. Democrats have called it a selectively edited group of Republican talking points that attempt to distract from the committee's own investigation into alleged Russian interference in the presidential election. The ranking committee Democrat Adam Schiff said the panel had crossed a deeply regrettable line.
We had votes today to politicize the intelligence process, to prohibit the FBI and the Department of Justice from expressing their concerns to our committee and to the House, and to selectively release to the public only the majority's distorted memo without the full facts. A very sad day, I think, in the history of this committee. As I said to my committee colleagues during this hearing, sadly, we can fully expect that the President of the United States will not put the national interest over his own personal interest. But it is a sad day indeed when that is also true of our own committee.
An administration official speaking anonymously said that privately Trump has been fuming over the Justice Department's opposition to releasing the memo. In a series of calls, Chief of Staff John Kelly reportedly urged Justice Department officials to do more within the bounds of the law to get the memo out. FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe abruptly stepped down from his position ahead of his planned retirement this spring. McCabe has been a target of frequent and aggressive criticism by Donald Trump. Trump accused the 22-year veteran of the FBI of bias because of his wife's political connections and an FBI investigation that produced no criminal charges against Hillary Clinton. Attorney General Jeff Sessions reportedly had pressured FBI Director Christopher Wray to dismiss McCabe. A New York federal judge ordered the immediate release of detained immigrants' rights activist Ravi Rogbeer. Federal Judge Catherine Forrest called Rogbeer's treatment unnecessarily cruel and said people subject to deportation deserve the freedom to say goodbye. Applause erupted in the packed Manhattan courtroom after Forrest's ruling. She refused a government request to halt her order for a possible appeal. Immigrants' rights groups say federal authorities are targeting immigration activists for detention and deportation. Federal immigration agents would be barred from entering California state buildings, including schools and courthouses, unless they have a warrant. The legislation by Democratic State Senator Ricardo Lara is the latest California effort to protect undocumented immigrants facing peril under the Trump administration. Lara said his measure would require ICE agents to obtain a federal warrant before detaining, questioning, or performing surveillance on anyone inside a California state building.
Hardworking immigrants who are dropping their kids off at school or serving as witnesses or even paying fines at the courthouse should not be targeted for unlawful arrest by ICE. The bill would protect the relationship between immigrants, non-immigrants, and law enforcement.
I'm Eileen Alfandera. You're listening to Sojourner Truth on Pacifica Radio.
I would like to welcome to Sojourner Truth, welcome back to Sojourner Truth, African-American historian and prolific author, Dr. Gerald Horn. Dr. Horn, welcome.
Thank you for inviting me.
And I'd also like to welcome Dr. Gareth Porter, himself an investigative historian and journalist on U.S. national security policy, who has been independent since a brief period of university teaching in the 1980s. He's the author of multiple books, including Manufactured Crises, The Untold Story of the Iran-Contra Scare. And Gareth Porter, welcome.
Thanks very much, Margaret. Glad to be back.
Okay, so Dr. Horn, let us start with you, because we were all shocked to learn about the death of Bob Parry, Robert Parry. He's the editor of Consortium News. And I often told Bob when I spoke with him that he's like the last investigative journalist left in the United States. That's not necessarily true, but certainly his work is notable. Dr. Horn, give us your reaction and any comments you might have on Robert Parry.
Well, I think it's a tremendous loss. It's a tremendous loss to the U.S. progressive movement. It's a tremendous loss to journalism. I recall some decades ago when a journalist in Arizona was killed as a result of his investigations of organized crime in that state, and journalists organized to carry on his mission. I think it would be quite appropriate for journalists to organize now, not only through Consortium News, which he helped to found and publicize, but through other venues to carry on the mission of Bob Parry. I think that we'll never forget, for example, his pioneering and trailblazing reporting on the Iran-Contra scandal in the 1980s under then U.S. President Ronald Reagan. I don't think we'll ever forget his pioneering and trailblazing reporting on the so-called October surprise, that is to say, the idea that during the 1980 electoral campaign for President of the United States, the Republicans cut a deal with the authorities in Iran to delay the release of the hostages held there and then releasing them on the day of Ronald Reagan's inauguration in January 1981, which obviously was quite a jolt to the U.S. public and to international public opinion as well. And finally, I think it would be quite appropriate for journalists to carry on his pioneering and trailblazing journalism with regard to this so-called Russiagate scandal. The idea that Russia interfered in the elections of the United States in November 2016. The death of Robert Parry has left a gaping hole that it will be very difficult to fill.
Right. And on that note, giving Bob Parry a proper introduction, he was an editor at Consortium News for more than 20 years. As an investigative journalist, he covered the Iran-Contra scandal for the Associated Press and Newsweek and broke many of the stories, with his work also appearing on Frontline. Robert Parry won the George Polk Award for National Reporting in 1984 for his work with the Associated Press on Iran-Contra, where he broke the story that the Central Intelligence Agency had provided an assassination manual to Nicaraguan Contras. And of course, this was the U.S. intervention in Central America. Dr. Horn, I know you have to dash. If you just stay with us for a minute more, we generally, in the tradition of Sojourner Truth, when a close family member of Sojourner Truth passes away, a notable person, we do play the morning song, which is sung in Dida from the album Na Afriki. So let us honor and remember the sad news now of the passing of journalist, investigative journalist, editor of Consortium News, Robert Parry.
Okoloka o pepe kukulu, awo pepe kukulu, awo pepe kukulu, yangboko ngala, yangboko ngala, okoloka lo.
And very, very sad news about investigative journalist Robert Parry. Also, Norman Solomon will be joining us later in the hour. Dr. Horn, just before we get some comments from Gareth Porter and before you have to head out, one of the things we know about Bob Parry is how critical he was of mainstream media for really not demanding evidence and also just really toting whatever the talking points came from the State Department.
Well, rather unusually, the obituary of Robert Parry in today's New York Times is not as hostile, for example, as the obituary that was written for Ed Herman, another critic of mainstream media, where the New York Times obituary writer basically decided to flay him, even though he was in his grave. I would actually point listeners to that obituary because it has a very poignant line. When Robert Parry was heading off to Central America to investigate what was going on with regard to the Iran-Contra scandal and aid to the Contras, his young son asked him why he had to leave, and Mr. Parry answered, because there are young children your age in Central America being killed because of U.S. policy, and I need to go tell their stories. And I think that we need that kind of zeal with regard to today's journalists. Also, the story mentions that he did not find it that difficult to investigate some of these scandals he unearthed, that there was evidence all over the place, except that mainstream journalists basically ignored this evidence or were too afraid to bring it to surface. Once again, he has left gigantic shoes that will be difficult to fill.
Right. Well, thank you, Dr. Gerald Horn, for joining us. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Gareth Porter, bringing you into this discussion, I'll tell you, Gareth, if I was really a paranoid person, I would really wonder why none of our Bob Parry clips this morning thus far are working. We had several of them to play during this hour. Our team, they're frantically still working to try to fix them. But what an irony here. But Gareth Porter, your reaction to the death of Bob Parry?
Well, I think he was a giant in the field of journalism in general. And when you consider him in the context of independent progressive journalism, he was in a class by himself. And the reason I say that is because he alone, among journalists who left corporate journalism because they had come to realize, and he did this early on, that they were not really able to publish everything that they knew, that they could not get stories published in a way that they deserved to be published in terms of placement, in terms of length, and so forth, and that there was a system there that was suppressing the efforts of honest journalists. And ultimately, the experience that he had, not just with Iran-Contra, but with the story of the Contras and their cocaine smuggling, which he knew about and which he was, he admired the journalist in Southern California, Gary Webb, very much, and Webb had been forced out of journalism because of his writing about that story, which was unacceptable to the media conglomerates and to the media establishment as well as the political establishment. And that's the reason ultimately that he decided to quit corporate journalism and to start his own independent journalistic enterprise. And so that's why he is so important to continuation of independent journalism in this country. Consortium News was alone in its effort to maintain an independent stance regardless of the pressures, political pressures from party elites, from the military-industrial complex, from the bureaucracy, the war system, to basically cover the stories that were continuing to come out in ways that were not going to trouble them. And Bob Perry's job, as he understood it, was to continue to cause trouble for the power elite. And that's exactly what he did. And as you mentioned earlier, Margaret, I think the most important thing that Bob Perry was doing at Consortium News was to maintain coverage of the whole Russia scare, the whole narrative that had taken over the country through the corporate media of Russia essentially challenging and trying to bring down the democratic system in the United States in 2016, with one story after another. And I'm proud to say that I was a small part of that coverage. Covering the story, the false narrative that Russia had tried to hack into U.S. electoral institutions at the state level. And so this was such an important endeavor that he was involved in. And I think that, you know, as I wrote on my Facebook page yesterday, it's really vital that progressive journalists and other progressives really rally around the Bob Perry family, his two sons and his wife Diane, and the board of directors of Consortium News, and help ensure the survival of this institution. It's so important.
Right. And, you know, just when I think of your work, also Norman Solomon, who will be joining us in a few minutes, and the work of people like Bob Perry and Gary Webb, and basically how Bob was really maligned. And we know what happened with Gary Webb. Mainstream media went after him. He wound up, we are told, committing suicide with two bullets in his head. There's still a lot of stories about whether or not it was a suicide. And of course, Gary Webb and Bob Perry both really can be credited on the trafficking, the CIA, the trafficking of crack cocaine. Into South LA in the U.S. But when Gary Webb started to work on Dark Alliance and that whole story, of course, he called Bob Perry and asked him for suggestions. And Bob Perry had already established in his earlier work that this illegal war going on in Nicaragua, clandestinely supported by the United States, because Congress did not give Reagan the money that he wanted to wage this war, that they already had an operation of trafficking in drugs. And this was something that that was known by the administration, was known by the government. And it's surprising even today, Gareth Porter, when one tells that story, people still have some trouble believing it. But it did indeed happen.
Yes, this is one of the lost histories, one part of the lost history of the United States, which Bob Perry cared about so passionately. It was a theme that he came back to over and over again. In fact, wrote a book about the lost histories, or the lost history of the United States, so many chapters of which were falsified by the news media. And this is something that I have, in my own writing, starting as an academic and then as a journalist, have found to be of central importance, really, in the politics of this country, that one story after another, one issue after another, has been politically distorted, deformed, if you will, by the fact that the narrative has been falsified. And, you know, in the case, for example, of U.S. policy toward Iran, I mean, the narrative that has been accepted by the news media and for 20-some years now has been repeated almost daily, is that Iran was interested in and actually covertly going after nuclear weapons. And as I showed in a series of stories and in my book, this was simply false. There's absolutely no evidence to support it. The evidence that has come out has been falsified. So this is, I think, central to what Bob Perry was about. And that's the challenge, that it's so difficult for journalists in this country to really measure up to, and which I think it's the single biggest problem that we have in American journalism.
And our guest is Dr. Gareth Porter, investigative historian and journalist on U.S. national security policy. And today we are honoring and we are remembering investigative journalist Robert Parry, editor of Consortium News for more than 20 years, covered the Iran-Contra scandal, had many breaking stories related to that, sadly passed away this weekend. What I'd like to do now is to go to a clip of Bob Parry.
I'm Bob Parry. I've been a reporter for a lot of years now. I grew up in a newspaper family. My dad ran a paper in Massachusetts, which is how I got into the business. And I worked for the Associated Press for a lot of years. And the Associated Press, as you probably know, is a major wire service, very straight in how it deals with stories, very just the facts, ma'am kind of place. Tends to be a little timid, but has a certain amount going for it, in this, at least the lack of spin that it often would not put on stories. And while at the Associated Press in Washington, I was assigned to this what was called the Special Assignment Team, and my job there began about the time that the Reagan administration did. I was given that appointment in December of 1980. And as part of the work I did, I focused on Central Intelligence, I focused on William Casey and Central America, covering it from Washington primarily, how the policies were developing. And that led us to a number of stories over the first few years of the decade. Many were very tough stories about gross human rights violations that were occurring in that region, and efforts by the U.S. government to contain, cover up many of those atrocities. From the El Mazote massacre, where more than 800 people, men, women, and children, were slaughtered in El Salvador, and then the U.S. government tried to hide that fact from the American people, and did so for about 10 years. But those stories led me to a very interesting character I met in 1983 named Oliver North, who was on the National Security Council and a rising star. And I kept an eye on North because he seemed so out of control. But he really was, in many cases, following orders. I mean, it was more like the entire White House was getting out of control during that period. So as we follow these stories, and they included stories like this, the CIA assassination manual, which I wrote in 1984, there were stories about secret battles that actually occurred between CIA helicopter units and the Sandinistas inside Nicaragua, which I wrote in December of 84. These stories led us to I was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize in 85, but we didn't get it. And the bureau chief, or the then executive editor of the AP, Walter Mears, took me aside in New York one day and said, "Tell me the story that will get us the Pulitzer. I want to go back for it next year." And I said, "Well, the story, I think, is about this guy named Oliver North who's running a secret war from the National Security Council staff in Central America. That's a pretty good story. That could win us the Pulitzer. So Mira said, okay, go at it. And we hired Brian Barger, who was then a freelancer. And the two of us began to write stories beginning in June of 85 about Oliver North's network, including the first story that mentioned him.
All righty. So it is really something to just hear the voice and the words, Gareth Porter, of Robert Parry that we are honoring today. And before we bring Norman Solomon into the discussion, I just want you, Gareth Porter, to tell us, you know, share with us any, you know, when you heard about Robert's passing and any personal or interaction that you had with Robert Parry that is okay to share with our audience.
Well, I first met Bob Parry when I was teaching a course at George Mason University, not as a regular instructor, but as adjunct, on war, on the media and war. And he came to my class and presented, really told the whole story of his career in the news media, the corporate news media, and why he left and how it happened. So I got his personal narrative from that perhaps hour or so narrative, and then questions and answers that we had with students. And it was really the first time that I had had a chance to hear Bob Parry talk in person, and it was extremely revealing because it showed me just how totally committed the man was to the truth. It was very moving, in fact, to hear him give his story to my class, and that was the beginning of my friendship with him. But more recently, as the story of that we've referred to earlier, the Russiagate, became such a major political phenomenon in the United States, and the media became under this shadow, really, such as I've never seen in my lifetime. Bob Parry became far more important, it seems to me, because of the role that he was playing. And, you know, I had just last fall talked to Bob about starting a little informal group of journalists to get together frequently to sort of mutual support and emotional sense, if nothing else. And because of the press of business for both him and myself, it never happened. And it's a great regret that I have that I never got to the point of this sort of regular get together with Bob and other friends. So that's really something that I was thinking about when I heard the terrible news about his death.
Right. Well, Gareth, what we want to do is to take a short station break, and then if you're able to stay with us, we will bring Norman Solomon into this discussion, and we'll hear more of the voice of Bob Parry. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Of the color of the skin.
Run, 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 but you sure can't
hide. And eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. Vote for me and I'll set you free. Rap on, brother, rap on. Well, the only person talking about love, man, brother, is the preacher. And it seems nobody's interested.
and the song Ball of Confusion by The Temptations. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. If you've missed any part of this hour, from 10 this morning for 90 days after that, just go to kpfk.org, scroll down to archives, click on Sojourner Truth. You'll be able to hear the show in its entirety, and you can subscribe for a free podcast. We would also like to welcome our SoundCloud listeners. You can check us out on SoundCloud. Just look for Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott. And you can get all of our archive shows and other news at our website at www.sotrueradio.org. And if you're a member of Facebook, you can like and friend us on Facebook. And today, we would like to give a shout out to all of our SoundCloud listeners in the state of Oregon. Let's give them a shout out today. And we are having a special where we are remembering and honoring the work of investigative journalist Robert Parry, who was the editor at Consortium News for more than 20 years. He won the Nieman Foundation's I.F. Stone Medal for Journalistic Independence. He has written several books, including Neck Deep, The Disastrous Presidency of George Bush, and Secrecy and Privilege, The Rise of the Bush Dynasty from Watergate to Iraq. He was also nominated for a Pulitzer Prize for National Reporting. And sadly, Robert Parry has passed away. He's now an ancestor on January 27th of this year. And it is reported that he died after a series of recent strokes at the age of 68. We are so sad here at Sojourner Truth. Robert Parry was often a guest on our show, and we definitely miss his voice. But before we bring in Norman Solomon, who will be joining us, let us go to hear more words now from Bob Parry.
The problem we then faced with the Iran-Contra scandal immediately was an effort to contain it. Once the White House had to admit they'd been lying all those months and all those years, they then immediately tried to contain it. In the words of Robert Dutton, one of the operatives, the word was out to build a Chinese wall around Ronald Reagan. And they did it. And they did it partly because the Democrats in the Congress decided that it would be too disruptive to this country, to our political system, to get to the truth. And there were meetings between Jim Wright and Lee Hamilton and others where they decided that it was best to sort of focus this just on Oliver North, say it was essentially a rogue operation, say Ronald Reagan really knew nothing much about this, Bush was clean, and we saw that story develop. And that's pretty much what the House and Senate investigations in 87 said. At the end of that, though, there was the pursuit of this investigation by John Kerry. And John Kerry, although not that he did everything perfectly, was the person who pushed this the hardest. But his investigation encountered constant roadblocks, as his chief counsel, Jack Blum, described in recent hearings on the Hill. There were all kinds of efforts to protect the Contras. And this gets back to the idea of perception management. The administration knew that they had to protect the Contras' image at all costs. There was a phrase that Walter Raymond used in his memos to his underlings. He said, the job is to glue white hats on the Contras and to glue black hats on the Sandinistas. There was no place for gray hats in this business. And that was the game. So whenever a reporter had the misfortune of discovering negative information about the Contras, the reporter had to come under attack, or the investigator, or the member of Congress, or whoever came up with the information. And in that environment, which got worse and worse and worse in Washington as the 80s went on, fewer and fewer people were willing to take those hits. People lost jobs. People lost careers. There was a lot of hard times for people who tried to tell the truth about these issues. And in that context, even when John Kerry came out with a report in the spring of 89, where he describes a lot of what he found about the Contras, that the CIA, that the U.S. government had been involved in giving money to four companies that were supplying the Contras and had been involved in drug trafficking, and that the DEA knew they were involved in drug trafficking when the United States paid them to deliver then called non-lethal or humanitarian supplies to the Contras. That was known. And it also turned out that when Kerry's people asked for an explanation of why is the United States paying money to these drug trafficking outfits, the answer came back, well, Oliver North wanted to maintain the infrastructure, the supply infrastructure, that the Contras had already put in place. So what they were admitting to was that the Contras had built their supply infrastructure around drug traffickers, which makes a certain amount of sense because they have the planes. Noriega was certainly involved with his network. So this is not as far-fetched or as conspiratorial as some people would like to make it. But what happened when Kerry's report came out, and it was a very important report. It not only dealt with the Contras, it dealt with Panama, a country we invaded a few months later. It was the first window into BCCI and that operation. So this very important report comes out. It is mocked in Washington. The Washington Post puts it on page A20 in a 700-word piece, which mostly denigrates it, written by Mike Isikoff. So this was the climate in which these allegations were heard. They were heard in an atmosphere of disdain and fear. Disdain for the information and fear of the consequences if you found the truth. But about a year ago, I got a call from Gary Webb of the San Jose Mercury News. And he says he's looking into the Contra drug thing. I said, well, that's interesting. And I said, what's your angle? What's your new angle? What do you have that's different? He said, well, he says, I'm really looking at it from the point of view of the impact of the drugs on South Central Los Angeles.
Amazing, the voice there of Robert Parry. And this was from a talk he gave at the Midnight Special Bookstore. And actually, that was a really special event in Santa Monica, California, because also on the platform included Gary Webb. And of course, we are today sadly marking the passing, the death of investigative journalist Robert Parry. And Gareth Porter is with us on the line, but I'd now like to welcome Norman Solomon, journalist, media critic, author, and activist. In 1997, he founded the Institute for Public Accuracy, a national consortium of policy researchers and analysts, which works proactively to provide alternative sources for journalists and serves as its executive director. He's the author of 12 books, including War Made Easy, How Presidents and Pundits Keep Spinning Us to Death, and with Reese Ehrlich, Target Iraq, What the News Media Don't Tell You. He is a nationally syndicated columnist on media and politics. His articles have appeared in the New York Times, Washington Post, Los Angeles Times, Boston Globe, and more. And Norman Solomon, welcome, even at this sad time for us all. And I know that you were particularly close with Bob Parry, and indeed you've written a piece in The Nation magazine remembering him. So welcome, Norman Solomon.
Oh, thank you, Margaret.
Okay, so Norman Solomon, clearly Bob Parry was the mainstream media not friendly, to say the least, to his work. But in the article you wrote for The Nation, you say that he was notably non-ideological. Tell us what you mean by that.
He really believed in journalism as a quest to get to facts that are most important and to get to truth. And when certain political tendencies or outlooks adulated or condemned him, it wasn't because he changed his North Star that he followed. It was because the political winds and the fashions and the often opportunism kicked in different directions. He was a classical, and I think would have answered to the description of being
an old-fashioned journalist. He read the documents. He dug into the backstory. He interviewed everybody he could possibly reach who had some relevance to not only the existing story, but the story that he could create. And, Margaret, I'm so glad that you played that audio of Bob speaking many years ago, because it really gives a sense of his willingness to pursue, holding a lantern very high, the truth that people needed to learn and rarely got from the mass media.
Yeah, absolutely. And the, you know, we're always so alarmed, those of us who do this work. And by the way, thank you so much for the work that you do with the Institute for Public Accuracy. Indeed, it's extremely useful to this show and to many of us in alternative media. But it seems as though the mainstream media, they kind of get the talking points. We're talking a bit with Gareth Porter about this. It's amazing because everybody seems to get the same talking points that then they all just kind of regurgitate without really asking tough questions and getting the truth of what is really going on, and really has set up the news media for this onslaught of attacks by Donald Trump in terms of fake media. Of course, don't give any credence. I'm not giving any credence whatsoever to Donald Trump's claims, but it does seem as though something is amiss here in terms of mainstream media, and Bob really pointed to that quite a bit.
We should really note that Bob came out of the mainline media. He was a reporter for the Associated Press when, in the mid-1980s, he, together with a colleague, Brian Barger, put Oliver North on the front page, pulled him out of the shadows, exposed the Iran-Contra deal, including Contra with U.S. involvement, CIA involvement, using planes and to raise money to engage in cocaine trafficking, the CIA assassination manual for the Contras, and much more. And so Bob won the Polk Award for his reporting about Iran-Contra issues and the assassination manual. He went on to Newsweek for 3 years. In 1990, he'd had enough and left and really became, in a sense, a whistleblower about mainline media as he became an independent journalist fully with the founding of ConsortiumNews.com, which is still flourishing. And I think that we should also mention, bring this to the present time, that it's because of Bob Perry's independence and his great journalistic skills and commitment that he has denounced the media flood, the torrent, the overwhelming dominance of the news media with what's called the Russiagate scandal. What Bob Perry did throughout last year was to show how there's almost no there, and that this claim that somehow Russia should be blamed for intervening in the election in 2016 is a lot of so-called intelligence agency spin that has been taken up by the vast majority of mass media, and a lot of people who are on the left don't like to hear that. But Bob Perry was never about telling people what they wanted to hear. Bob was about reporting news that wasn't getting out otherwise, and that's why Consortium News has been so important since the 2016 election in pointing out that there's a huge frenzy to try to make Russia our enemy, a huge frenzy coming from the top of the Democratic Party, from the CIA and NSA, from the mass media, with very few exceptions, when you've got two countries that are nuclear superpowers, and every time anti-Russia frenzy is cranked up, it increases the chances of nuclear conflagration. And Bob Perry was about following the facts, and I really encourage people, go to consortiumnews.com, see what that media outlet has been doing and will continue to do.
Right. And on that note, and this is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth, for people who are just joining us, we are remembering Robert Perry, editor of Consortium News, investigative journalist, award-winning investigative journalist covering the Iran-Contra scandal and working with Gary Webb uncovering the CIA trafficking in drugs leading to crack epidemic coming into South Los Angeles. What I'd like to do now is to just share with all of you, with you, Norman and Gareth and our audience, just a clip of an interview with Bob Perry on Sojourner Truth. And one, he talks about the media, and then he also talks about STRATCOM, or strategic communications.
There should be a kind of a demand that the U.S. government, in this case the Trump administration, not just say they have high confidence in, of something, but tell us how they actually know it and what the evidence is. But the New York Times and the Washington Post and others are simply saying, no, no, we accept this as flat fact. Anyone who disagrees must be some kind of fringe character.
So that's all we have to go on, is to say, well, we believe that they intercepted this. So what alternative or what opposing evidence are experts raising about this?
Well, first of all, Margaret, I mean, just because the U.S. intelligence community says something doesn't make it true.
Right.
And the idea that, we can't tell you the details, we can't give you the actual content of the conversations, we can't play them for you. This is not the way it's happened in the past. There have been cases, especially when there's an important international event, when the U.S. government has taken its evidence before the United Nations and revealed it. Famously, in 1962, President Kennedy declassified the capabilities of the U-2 surveillance planes to show the world that Soviet missiles had been placed in Cuba. In 1983, Ronald Reagan authorized the release of transcripts and tapes of U.S. intercepts of Soviet military commands to their aircraft. This was highly sensitive material. So there's no reason why the United States can't say, here's the intercept of this person talking to this person, this is what was said. There's no reason why they can't provide their so-called geospatial evidence. Yes, there are spy satellites. I mean, I guess that's a technical secret, but everybody knows it. So but instead of presenting that kind of evidence, they simply say, we know it. We have high confidence, whatever the phrase they want to use. And we've seen in the past when they've asserted these kinds of things, when they turn out not to be true. But instead of demanding this kind of evidence, the mainstream media just goes along with it.
What do they mean when they talk about strategic communications?
Well, STRATCOM is sort of the current phrase that's now used. In the past, it's been called psychological operations. Mm-hmm. Propaganda. It basically is the idea of using information warfare, that is, using the way you can spin facts to try to get an advantage versus your adversaries. And there's a new STRATCOM command that's been set up in Latvia by NATO, which buys into this idea that these psychological operations should be run against the world population to try to get the public in support of NATO or U.S. policies. Now, what that has sort of gotten the U.S. government and others into, and this has been going on really for decades, maybe generations at this point, is this idea that if you use words and information in kind of an Orwellian way, you can then manipulate populations, and supposedly it target populations and in sort of adversary governments or countries. But it's also been played against the American public, because you can't narrowly target something like information on one specific country, because it spreads around the world. So what you're getting is sort of a strategy. And in Syria, what you've had on all sides has been intensive propaganda warfare. information warfare. And the United States consciously went in and provided to the opposition, to the enemies of Assad, video cameras, training, how to use social media, and sort of had them essentially producing their own propaganda at a local level.
Mm.
And what that's going to achieve, though, is a lot of false information. Yes, you might get some real information out of it, too, but you're also going to get information designed to advance their causes.
Yeah.
And that's what we've seen. And so it's very difficult then to dissect what's real and what is manufactured. But it's a problem that really requires then the intelligence professionals to explain what they know and how they know it. Because otherwise you can get sort of black propaganda blowing back into the United States and influencing what the U.S. government does. And that's why this rush to judgment on Syria was so concerning, because there was, instead of taking the time that's usually required to go through these sorts of things, there was an immediate, within hours, President Trump was announcing that this was done by the Assad regime.
Right. The
CIA analysts did not have that kind of time to go through this carefully. And once the president makes a statement like that, the bureaucracy falls in line. You might have some courageous analysts who still say, listen, we've got to get the facts straight. But once the president makes a call, and once he then acts on that, i.e. firing off the 59 Tomahawk missiles, then the chance for a serious investigation are almost nil inside the U.S. government. That's why the press has a responsibility to demand, not just accept what they say, but to demand what they have, what the evidence is, so the American people are not misled. But the mainstream press has completely forsaken that responsibility.
All righty. The words of Robert Parry, investigative journalist, editor of Consortium News, who died January 27th, 2018, at the young age of 68 years old. Another investigative journalist on the line with us, Gareth Porter. Just some final thoughts from you.
Well, first of all, I couldn't agree more with what Norman has just been saying, but particularly going back to his description of Bob Parry as someone who was not motivated by any ideology at all. He was really, as Norman correctly says, an old-style journalist who was really guided by an inner light that was after the truth. I think it's no accident that as the clip that you played by Bob Parry earlier suggested, he's the son of a journalist of a small town, or not big city, but a newspaper editor in Massachusetts. It's a kind of search for the truth that was part of his family heritage, and that goes a very long way, I think, towards explaining why Bob Parry is such a unique figure in American journalism, and particularly why he is the man who has established this unique institution in Consortium News that has been so important and really needs to be somehow preserved. And that work that he started carried on.
Yes, thank you, Gareth Porter. And final thoughts from you, Norman Solomon.
That unique role that Gareth aptly described is, I think, bittersweet for those of us who have appreciated so deeply what Bob Parry did for decade after decade. It's the bad news and the good news. The bad news is that a journalist with integrity who is willing to follow whatever evidence leads in whatever direction is so unusual. And we want so many journalists to do their work the way Bob did. And the good news is we have institutions, including ConsortiumNews.com, that do follow that path that runs into huge headwinds. whether it's over the U.S. government propaganda about Syria or about Russia or any other often topics we could mention. So this is a sad time, to put it mildly, as we grieve about the loss of Bob Perry. It's also a time to rededicate what he was all about.
Absolutely. Thank both of you, Gareth Porter and Norman Solomon. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Margaret.
All righty. And other sad news is that Julius Lester, who was a field secretary for the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, has also passed away last week. And we're just gathering more information on that, and we'll be remembering him in a future show. So we are out of time now, and I'd like to thank all of today's guests. We encourage you to go to Consortium News. I'd like to thank the entire Sojourner Truth team, our assistant producer, Stephanie Case, our intern, Sherelle Withers, and our engineer today, Lizette Tapia. We want to welcome her. Stay tuned for Rising Up. Sojourner Truth will be back on the air tomorrow. If you'd like a copy of today's show, please contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230 or go online to pacificaradioarchives.org. Thank you for listening. This is your host, Margaret Prescott.
And you've been listening to Sojourner Truth Radio on KBOO Community Radio. Coming up at 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein, and 11 o'clock, Letters in Politics looks at the fascist takeover of Vienna, Black Lives Matter today, and the nature of the presidency. And please remember, people, that KBOO keeps this important information coming to you, and you can join us if you go to kboo.fm and click on Donate. You can become a supporting member of Community Radio. KBOO. Coming right up, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary immediately following this next announcement.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring an archivist. This contract position will steward the KBOO archival assets in all forms, all kinds of audio formats, as well as the document and electronic archives. Priorities for this position are to manage the Resource Space Archival Database, in particular the entry of metadata, and to support staff and volunteers during the 50th anniversary celebrations. Deadline for this position is Monday, February 5th, 2018 at 5 p.m. More information can be found at KBOO.